Well, welcome everybody to another Nexus webinar. I'm your host, Andrew Estes, and this morning I'm thrilled to welcome Roy Moran. Roy helped plant Shoal Creek Community Church in the Kansas City area in 1993 to help make Jesus accessible. And under his leadership, Shoal Creek has grown significantly, reaching people who traditionally wouldn't step foot inside of a church. He's also the author of Spent Matches, which has been a very formative book for our Nexus Network, a book that has been huge and a lot of disciple making circles. And Roy calls helps us consider this idea of hybrid church. This model is a dynamic attempt to combine attractional church strategies or prevailing church strategies with the powerful principles of disciple making movements. And this model uniquely emphasizes the gathering of people on Sunday and the network fostering multiplication far beyond the walls of the building. Roy also serves as the chairman of the board and global platform leader for New Generations, an organization empowering ordinary people all over the world to create chain reactions of disciples making disciples. He's a coach, trainer, husband, father, grandfather, and our guest today. Roy, thank you so much for joining us, man.
Well, it's great to be here, Andrew. Appreciate it, man. Always good to spend time with you.
Good to see you, man. Yeah. So, Roy, I was just talking to Roy's joining us via mobile phone from the great state of Texas in Dallas at a conference. Where are you at right now, Roy?
Yeah, I'm in one community church in Plano, Texas. And I'm attending the Missional AI Conference. So I'm out of my league here.
One of those conferences that didn't exist when Spent Matches came out.
Exactly. It is part of the stuff that I'm learning or hearing or being exposed to. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Well, I would love for you to just kind of give us a little bit of your story, help people that are not familiar with you become a little bit more so. And maybe just leading into, you know, some of your story at Shoal Creek initially, the heartbeat behind the church plant, you know, several years ago, but then maybe just lead us into the shift that happened in your heart about 10 years ago that led you into disciple making movements and to authoring the book Spent Matches.
Sure. Well, you know, I'm an entrepreneur at heart. And so having a theological education and being an entrepreneur, it just sort of that perfect storm led to planting a church. I got influenced by Willow Creek and desire to build a church for the unchurched. And so all of that mixture culminated in 95. We had a, you know, early 90s core team development and then launched in 95. And then as we were successful, we were sort of a purebred, you know, a lot of us were converting from one type of model to another, but we were just pure out of the blocks. And so I'm making disciples, but I had this existential moment in my life. And that existential moment was a space in which I had really three guys I was watching, you know, come to faith. We were reading the Bible together and every Friday morning. And I began to ask myself, what does a Great Commission mean to them? And as I did that, I realized that I was making disciples, but the way I was doing it, I wasn't making disciples who could make disciples. My generational chart, if I'm Gen Zero, Gen One, pretty healthy, lots of Gen One people and stuff, but Gen Two was few and far between. And my disciples were not making disciples. And I had this moment where I asked myself about these three guys. I said, what does a Great Commission mean to them? And it was like, they need to make disciples. And so I had looked back at myself and it's sort of an honest, you know, very, very sober look at saying, okay, can they do what I'm doing with other people? And I realized they couldn't. I was using my theological education. I was using my temperament, my experience, and they had none of that. And so it was going to take them years to get what I had, to do what I was doing. And so it caused me to have this existential moment to ask myself, is there a different way of doing this? Anybody in the world that has cornered the market for learning how to make disciples and make disciples and make disciples, and it doesn't depend on all these heavy resources and stuff. And so that's why I ran into the City Team folks, who is now New Generation. And just, you know, by God's grace was given an entree into that team. So in 2010, I spent two entire team just listening, sitting at their feet, figuring out what they're doing, and then started a journey at that point to figure out what it would be like to take this replicative disciple making model and pair it with this local fellowship that I had started, that was radically focused on or postured toward the lost. And so we began that journey. And, you know, as 4 or 5 years later, I wrote the book Spent Matches, about our experience of trying to mesh two really different strategies. You know, this collectional strategy calls people to a space on a regular distributive strategy that encourages people to move out and to plant the gospel, learn, work, and play, try to sustain a network of these biblically flourishing communities, you know, around our area. So, you know, that started, and obviously at that point, which we have now, it'd be great, you know, if you could forward into and take the learnings from the future and pull them back into the present and be able to operate on that. But we weren't. We made a lot of mistakes, been a lot slower, harder process than we really anticipated. But you know, we're still at it in that sense, still looking at this hybrid strategy of realizing that, you know, in our culture, a rough estimate, you know, if we package all the research that's going around, there's maybe 30% of the people that are susceptible to an invitation to come and engage in a spiritual experience on a Sunday morning. So that leaves about 70% of the population that won't come. There's not a lot. I mean, we don't have the money, the talent, you know, that able to get them to come. And so it's like, how do we go for them, go after them? And that's where the hybrid strategy comes in. You know, this idea of we're gonna play in the space of attractional church, and we're not leaving that space. We feel like it still has a vital opportunity for a small, you know, a minority segment of the population, but we're also gonna play in the space of distributive type thing of how do we plant these local fellowships, these local small, and people have struggled word for the micro church, house church, you know, kind of stuff. Modify the word church. We just think like, you know, ecclesia is ecclesia, and whether you find it big, small, you know, whatever, it's ecclesia. So, you know, develop all these new terms like biblically flourishing community and redemptive platforms and all kinds of language like that to describe, you know, these things that work in a neighborhood or a workplace or are planted, you know, in a jail, you know, communities and all those kind of things. So that's the quick version there.
Yeah, no, that's awesome, man. You're breaking up just a little bit. Okay. I'm not sure if there's any service that you can do to improve that, but
let me move.
You're good. But I would love to hear, because Shoal Creek itself, and just even like starting with your gathering and starting how you guys do church, is significantly different than the majority of kind of prevailing model churches. Like, you guys are mm-hmm. super attractional, and like, and just mm-hmm. saying that. Why don't you unpack for us like what the vision was initially when it started, and just kind of give us a breakdown of what would somebody expect to see at okay. Shoal Creek?
Yeah. So like I say, we weren't converting from a model to something. When we heard folks at Willow say something like building a church for the unchurched, we had a blank slate to work with. And so that blank slate made it really possible for us to do anything because no history, no tradition or whatever. So we decided, you know, we believe that things like you couldn't meet the needs of the seeker or the believer in the same service. And so we started a traditional seeker, or we would refer to as explorer service now, where people would come and we would scrub the language down to speak to them in their language rather than speak in our language. And so instead of, you know, things like we want to help you have a personal relationship with God, we would acknowledge that they already had a personal relationship, that they feel like God creator, and they have these moments of transcendence and they feel like God's awesome and all those kind of things. And so we would acknowledge that, and our language would be that we want to help you have a different kind of relationship with God. We want you to have not only a creature relationship, we want you to have a father-child relationship with God. And we'd like to help you understand, you know, what that looks like. So our Sunday is designed with very little, if any, musical worship. So we often have Christians come and leave in the middle of the service because they were coming hoping to find a new worship leader with a new set list that they liked better than, you know, down the street. And there's none of that. So they hear music that they're not used to hearing, you know, on a Sunday morning. And it's kind of music that's coming off the radio or, you know, that kind of stuff, popular music or famous, you know, songs that out of our culture. So they hear a lot of that. But we start with a theme on Sunday morning. So right now we're in this theme called Beautiful Empty. And it's going to lead up, obviously, to Easter next week. And so this past week, the Beautiful Empty was about surrender. And it's like we use the story of Nicodemus, and this idea of the insanity of thinking we're in control. And we did I forget the song we used. You can go on to vimeo.com/shoalcreek and you can see all this stuff. But we used a song, I can't think of it right now. And then we had a dramatic sketch about a guy praying the Serenity Prayer. And there's another actor in the sketch who played God. And so you get inside this guy's head as he prays the Serenity Prayer and God questioning him about, do you really know what serenity is? And, you know, that kind of stuff. And so it's humorous and touching and stuff as this guy works through the Serenity Prayer and has this conversation with God. And I use the story of Zacchaeus that, you know, he climbed up in a tree to see Jesus. He had some interest in his heart, but his interest was probably not what we think it is. He could have gone to the front of the line, the front of the crowd, rather than climbed up in the tree. He had a safe distance from Jesus and just challenged people to say, you know, until you get up close personal Jesus, things don't happen. Sitting in a Sunday morning service might be like climbing a tree. You know, Jesus is a safe distance. And so, and I forget the song we ended with, but, you know, just a lot of art, a lot of creativity. The language is all, you know, sort of put in the language of people who aren't used to coming to church. So we really submit ourselves to them and who they are and what they're doing or what they think and how they talk so that we can communicate to them, you know, the genuine nature that Jesus wants their allegiance. You know, he wants to be the center of their life. He wants to be the king of their world. And, you know, your desire to be in control is really a figment of your imagination. So, but I mean, it just happens on a regular basis, you know, like this week, Beautiful Empty, I forget, Surrender is the third. And obviously the last week will be about the resurrection and stuff. So,
yeah, no, that's good. Well, your book came out, what was it, 2015? Was that the release date?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So 2015, so it's been 10 years of trying to integrate desperately or this hybrid church model of attractional and also the gathering or so mm-hmm. you call the gathering and the network, correct? Mm-hmm. Of walking through some of these different things. What have been some of the things that you've learned things that you've done well, things that you would do differently, things that is working and not working just over the last 10 years as Shoal Creek, kind of the gathering piece of that has really kind of moved into both of these spaces.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the overriding emotion that I have had to accept is it's harder than I thought it would be. It's an uphill climb all the way. And even the pervasive model of Christianity in the West, it's a deep DNA of an American, not just a Christian, but an American. And so seeing people come to faith, they so quickly are onboarded into sort of that Christian world thing. And they discover there's Christian radio, there's all kinds of YouTube podcasts and that kind of stuff. And so the idea of keeping people in their lost world, reaching people for Jesus is so much harder than I thought it would be. So that's one thing that I've had to struggle with as I've grown older and older and get closer to the end of my life. I realize that I'm not as far as I hoped I would be at this point. And just realizing that maybe I'm getting the next generation ready and making the way for them in that regard. If I had it to do over again, I would probably spend a lot more time being simpler and clearer in the process. You and I met through Oxano, so this that clarion call to clarity. I think I've discovered that it is far more important than I ever thought it would be. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's been. It's become exponentially important over time,
No, that was really funny because I had started reading Spent Matches at the kind of recommendation of our director, Phil Claycomb. It was Spent Matches and like Lessons from the East and some other books like that. Starfish Movement, I think, by Dan Grider, and like some other things like that. And so like all of my paradigm is like starting to shift, but at the same time we were in the middle of like a year or two into planting a church and went into all of it, which is like prevailing church mindset and everything that looks like. And long story short, ended up starting getting trained in Vision Frame stuff. I did the God Dream certification. Went to Nashville to do the Church Unique certification. I remember talking with one of the trainers there. I think it was Brian Rose from Oxano. And I was just like, man, this is just doing all this reading, like Spent Matches just wrecked me the other day. And like, I feel like this Vision Frame stuff's just very Western and all of that mindset. And he's like, oh, absolutely it is. But it's still really good. He's like, oh, I know Roy. And then he comes back later and he's like, so Roy's actually down the hall doing like a unique certification for like life coaching. You want to meet him? And I was like, well, yeah, I want to meet him. It was really good to hear you kind of even affirm that, you know, just mm-hmm. within the organizational leadership, that there has to be that vivid amount of clarity mm-hmm. with the mission, the purpose, mm-hmm. the vision, the strategy, where we're actually going, why we actually do what we do, and infusing that into like what fuels or mm-hmm. what aligns maybe the movement and the dream mm-hmm. that you had. Mm-hmm. But that was a really fun experience for me to just be like, oh yeah, Roy's down the hall. Yeah. If you want to talk to him about all of this.
and I wish, as much time as I spent working on clarity, I wish I would have spent, five times more, in the sense of having stepping stones. It's like I've got people, the second, the two-story paradigm that comes out of, I think, is it
the Christian? Upper Room, Lower Room?
Yeah, Upper Room or Lower Room. Yeah. The steps, actually, I think of it as a ladder.
Yeah.
Rather than steps. Okay. And if you think about a ladder, and that ladder having missing rungs in it, and how hard it is to get people to climb up on something high when, you know, maybe at the 5 foot level, there's one rung missing, and they'll step over that, you know, and exert themselves. But at the 10 foot level, there's two rungs missing. And so now it's getting a little more dangerous. And so I realized that I haven't spent enough time, you know, clarifying the steps, you know, with people in the kind of simplicity that leads to action. You know, it's like I can have all kinds of, I can spin all kinds of great stuff with great words and those kind of things. But if I can't get my words to actions in their minds, it makes it very difficult for them to follow me. I think about a friend of mine the other day I had a conversation with, and he acknowledged that he doesn't use his turn indicators when he drives. And I just was equating that to his leadership skills. And I said, you know, it makes it difficult if I'm in traffic, which life is about traffic, you know, and I'm trying to follow you and you don't use your turn indicators and you turn abruptly. It creates anxiety in me. And I think I did that a lot with people. I was thinking and emoting on the fly. And as a result of that, I was difficult to follow sometimes in that process.
Mm. Can you give us what was like an example of something like that?
Well, I would get frustrated with the words I was using not getting across to people. Okay, so it's like, okay, so I start out with just being as close to the text as you can. Make disciples. And people didn't have a context for what make disciples. So I get frustrated after using that ad infinitum times. And I think, okay, let me think of a different metaphor. How about spiritual mothers and fathers? All right, let's become spiritual mothers and fathers in the spiritual world. Now, in my mind, there's a direct connection to that. I mean, it's like, it's just a synonym. But in their minds, it wasn't. In their minds, it was something radically different. Oh, he's changed his direction. He's doing something different now. And I wasn't able to connect the terms that I was wanting to move to, because I really love words. And so, you know, I buy into the words make worlds thing, you know, and that kind of stuff. And so I'm using them as synonyms. And then, you know, when I would wear out spiritual mothers and fathers, I'd find a new one, you know, and so people had a hard time. They didn't see the straight line like I saw the straight line. And so I didn't take the time to help them understand, you know, why I was using these things and what I was trying to do. I was just more, I thought of it as casting vision, and I wasn't doing the hard work of casting vision and realizing that, you know, it's like sort of classic, you know, Will Mancini thing is that, you know, vision doesn't, you know, flow through paper. It's like it flows through people. So you need to spend enough time with people, letting them tell you what they're hearing from you, so you can figure out what you're communicating.
Yeah, that's good. Oh, that's really good. So with the hybrid church model, I mean, just the intentionality, the clarity on vision. When you shifted into like actually trying to implement some of that stuff, what worked for you right away? I know in the Spent Matches book, you kind of lead with those, I believe it's seven questions, right? Which is basically kind of following the 3/3 discovery Bible study type of method that has just been revolutionary worldwide for so many just different movements of just like simply reading a text, like, what are you going to do about it? And then coming back next week and then being able to hold each other lovingly accountable to what you felt like God called you to do. And your seven questions kind of lead you through that, coming up with like, I will statements. Mm-hmm. How quickly did you come up with that or discover some of that? I know you mentioned like getting connected with City to City, and was that some of the stuff that they were using already, and how well did it work in your context?
Yeah, I just adapted that from the New Generations team, you know, and what was happening, you know, in East West Africa and South Asia and different Southeast Asia, different places. You know, I looked at that and you know, guys like John King and of course, building off of David Watson and those things are coming right from there, you know, in a sense. I just borrowed that. And we just sort of tried to simplify it, you know, put it in words. You know, it's like thanks, challenge, serve, you know, just these seven steps that a group would have. And in many ways, you know, for those that are coming out of a more of a formal setting, it's the liturgy of you know, movement type stuff in the discovery world. It's just like these seven things that just hit every time. So, you know, it was easy to teach people that, and people got excited about it, using it, you know, and that kind of stuff. But where the struggle came and the real speed bump and friction that we discovered is that, you know, that's meant really to help you take your non-believing friends and put them in front of God and let God lead them into his family through using this discovery process. So, you know, it's like the offer to people was, hey, would you like to read the Bible and discover what God has to say about life with me? You know, and so the hard part was the fact that people had to ask their non-believing friends to be, you know, engaged with them. And what we discovered is that and this is the downside of the hybrid world is that what you're one with is usually what you're one to. And so they came on a Sunday morning and they heard this cool music and this, you know, a relevant message and that kind of stuff. And so that's what they were one with. And so now we're saying, okay, this is great. We need to get you out of here. You know, this is like an airport terminal. You didn't come here to stay. You came here to go someplace. And we want you to go to your neighborhoods, your workplaces, and we want you to plant the gospel there. And if you want to come here on Sunday, that's great. But it's not necessarily, it doesn't have to be a steady diet in, you know, in your spiritual journey. And so we discovered that the two sides exist in tension with one another. And so you've got to build a rationale for why people need to get out in the community and focus on the network side of things. And so we have the stuff like the studies we've done, and they're not formal studies by any means, they're more hip pocket stuff, but you know, about 3 years into it, people run out of people to invite to come with them, and so as a result of that, they need to figure out some other way of being the obedient to the last command that Jesus gave them. And so you've got this great tool of Sunday morning, people there, but when you run out of people to invite, you need to go do something else. And so that's what the vision, we have this S-curve thing that we communicate to people to say, hey, at some point, you know, you're going to get frustrated because this is exciting for you first time, and this is exciting every time you bring someone new, and you are fully invested. But the moment you stop bringing new people or have people to bring, this is going to get old, and you're going to find yourself, you know, wanting more. And the fact is that here's more. Here's, you know, let's teach you how to, you know, plant things. But so when we did that, what we discovered is now they knew very few lost people, because even for us, we had sucked them into a Christian ghetto, and so now, you know, we're telling people, reach your neighborhood. Okay, it's like, okay, where's God calling you to go? And a lot of Americans will typically say their neighborhood. It's like, okay, let's take a look at how many of your neighbors you know, and how many of your neighbors know each other. And so all of a sudden, instead of gospel planting, we realized that we had to get into community building, because there was no community to access there. And so they had to become party planners. They had to become socialites, you know, fire pits and neighborhood, you know, holiday parties and all this kind of, to get neighbors to know themselves, so they could then invade that community with the gospel and invite those who are spiritually interested, you know, into discovery and stuff like that. So it was like, that was a sort of a surprise to us. It shouldn't have been if it kept our, you know, eyes to the horizon and seen what was happening in American culture. But it was just difficult for us to realize that now we had to add a piece to it. It wasn't just go out and invite people to Discovery Group, because they didn't have that many genuine relationships that they could use to invite people into that. And so they had to create those relationships. And so, you know, building curiosity in people as a discipline, building this idea of understanding, you know, the context in which God wants you to work in, and learning that context and getting to know the people in there and using the tool of curiosity to get to know them and all that kind of stuff. And it just got harder, you know, as we went along, because we were naive at the beginning thinking that all this could happen. You know, it just would be natural. And there were so many roadblocks in the way that we didn't see when we started.
I really appreciate that, because that's really one of those things. I forget if it's like the E scale, like the Engel scale, but it talks about, like, you know, just how separated people can get from their lost friends once they get like fully acculturated into just the Christian worldview and all of those different things. And like you were saying earlier, like there's podcasts and there's a whole genre of music and the movies and all the things that there's just probably not on anybody's radar if they're not following Christ. But being able to get to that point is, you know, just slowly removing them from the culture that they came from. And so I can totally resonate with that tension that you guys are facing there. I'd love to kind of, you know, what has stuff looked like so far? I mean, and we don't need to get into numbers. I know you shy away from that with at the end of the book and stuff like that with the network, but on the side of things, like when you're talking about leadership development, when you're talking about training and sending out more and more and more groups, how has that developed for you guys?
Yeah, you hear me okay now?
Yes, sir. Thank you so much.
Good. There may be a little background noise here. I'm out in the lobby, but I estimated the other day, I was just sort of doing a little pencil scratching that we're probably started somewhere in the neighborhood of above 500 groups.
Wow.
I would say that, you know, twice I can document the fact that we've been to four generations in that regard. We can regularly get to second generation pretty easily. Third generation is a real roadblock, and we also struggle to see ecclesia form. You know, it's again, people look at what's happening on Sunday morning, and it's like, It is attractional. It is attractive, you know, and so we are our own worst enemies. So as we cast vision and give people a hope for what it looks like to do a vibrant relationship with Jesus without having a Sunday morning attendance, that is a space that's empty in most Americans' minds. And so creating those models for people to understand that you could vibrantly be connected to a bunch of families in your community, or you could have this thing at work that's happening, or all, you know, those kind of things. It's hard, and that's where we're stuck in a sense. We're pushing hard against that and really trying to build those models for people to see and experience so they'd understand that. And it's beyond a group. So
do you feel with all the your kind of experience and leaders that you've been, and churches you've interacted with in the States, do you feel with the style of Sunday morning service it's easier to get to the network from like a very attractional type of thing from what you're doing, or like a more traditional type of church that would just be very, very worshipful and kind of more prevailing model? Is it more difficult to get to disciple making from one to the other, or easier from one to the other?
I would say they both have their drawbacks. I would say it may be easier from the more worshipful, or, you know, musical worship and that kind of stuff, because it's so radically different. You know, in a sense, this is clearly a space for people who understand a language around Jesus and the Bible that's connected to modern Christianity. Let's go to a space that's not. So it's very different, and I'd say it's easier from that standpoint to call people to something radically different
they have a stronger connection to Sunday morning. Whereas over time, you know, we discover that people do realize that you're right. I mean, Sunday's good, but you know, we really, it's not as good as it used to be, and we want it to be as good as it used to be. And it's like, okay, the reason it's not as good as it used to be is because you were sitting on the edge of eternity. You were invested in building the family of God. And so you need to get reinvested in finding a new space to build the family of God. That's where the secret sauce is, you know, for your spiritual journey and stuff. So that's the hard part for us. I will say that, you know, when people think of hybrid, always telling me, oh, don't try to recreate Shoal Creek. Don't try to, I mean, the seeker movement's dead and gone, you know? And so don't try to go back, you know, to that. We're not trying to sell that by any stretch of the imagination, but there is every local, congregation, especially if they own property, has assets that they can leverage for the community. And so, like, for instance, for us right now in our building, we realized that we had a lot of underutilized space. And so we created a business called the Co-op at Shoal Creek. And so we actually rent offices now on our campus. We have 8 different businesses that operate out of our space. They use our conference rooms. They use our different meeting facilities and that kind of stuff. And so we've created this kind of space. So the community is beginning to rethink of this campus as a business incubator rather than a church in the formal sense of the word. So I think every local fellowship has that ability to think about, okay, what are the assets here? You know, it's like, I mean, one that's highly underutilized and it's counterintuitive to most local fellowships, but you know, people are always looking for a space to get married in. And most local fellowships make it difficult for people outside their sort of congregation to use their facilities. It's like, what if you were to change your mind? What if you were to make it easy? You know, what if you build a team, you know, a marriage team and reach into the community and actively market your space and services around that. So, and, you know, require people to do premarital counseling. And so they've got to go through premarital counseling to use. And so in that space, they develop a relationship with someone. And we use a discovery in that process. We have 3 passages that we tell people that they need to go through, you know, in this process. Plus, we use Saving Your Marriage Before It Starts. It's a great resource. Everyone can be involved and get aggressive about that, you know. And we have photographers and we have musicians and we have decorators and all kinds of stuff. You know, we can provide for people. And so, you know, marketing our space in a way that creates relationship with the community. And so there's, you know, every local fellowship that, especially if they own property, has a bunch of assets. And if they just looked around, you know, they could really engage, you know, differently, despite what their style of meeting is on a Sunday morning.
Yeah. That's really interesting. We've mentioned this a couple of times, just the ministry of New Generations. Could you just tell us, like, what is New Generations? And then I'd love to kind of unpack a little bit of your work there and how that's kind of influenced some of Shoal Creek. But what is New Generations?
Well, you know, I could put a couple filters here. New Generations, since I'm at an AI conference, I'll use this term. New Generations is a DAO, D-A-O, a distributed autonomous organization. and by that, I mean that we have partners in West Africa, New Harvest Mission. We have partners in East Africa, Lifeway Global. We have partners in North Africa and TDMM. We have partners South Asia now. We have all these different partners, these indigenous ministries around the world. So instead of being a sending organization like most, you know, Western missionary, we work on local leadership. And we engage local leadership and help them learn a new style of gospeling. And so that's what happened early on. And if people have read the book Miraculous Movements, you see the story of what happened early on when we were operating under the title City team at that point. We built the platform for Shidonke Johnson and Yusa Zhao and Aichi Bain and Ayla Tassi and all those guys. We built a platform from them standing to learn a new way of gospel and to use obedience-based discovery focused discipling to bring people to Christ. And so, you know, this whole idea of, if anybody's read Contagious Disciple Making, or David Watson, you know, talks about, you know, disciple people into the family of God. So we built that platform, and they came and they succeeded. And now it's north of 3 million disciples and 140,000 churches. And it's in 60 different countries and stuff like that. So, that's what we do as an organization, is we platform the discovery-focused, obedience-based disciple-making, help people understand, you know, how to implement it personally into a team and into a network, and build these three-dimensional radiating hubs of gospel-making in different spaces around the world. So in a nutshell, that's kind of who we are, what we do. And so, you know, like I say, we're all across sub-Saharan Africa, all across, you know, especially the middle part, northern, central part of India, Southeast Asia, Eurasia, all spaces.
Yeah. So, I mean, following you on social media, I feel like you're around the world like half the time or half the year. I mean, so you get to travel to all these spaces, observe a lot of ministry that happens, and just walking through all of the DMM learnings and just influence the ministry that happens in so many different forms and places. How has that changed or influenced how you guys have done ministry locally at Shoal Creek?
Well, you know, some of the very simple kernel type DNA pieces that phrase disciple people into the family of God, it has a way of ruminating inside you and being, oh my gosh, what does that mean? I'm not persuading people to believe in Jesus anymore. I'm, you know, as a church leader, I'm not haranguing people to, quote, share their faith. And so what do I do? How do I, you know, it's like, okay, how do I get them to understand what it looks like to be a disciple, to go into the neighborhood and create these spaces where their friends and family can come and read the Bible together, discover what God has to say about life. And it radically reorganizes my way of thinking, but it also lowers the emotional barrier, especially in, you know, today, in our contentious world, it's no one wants to be found trying to tell someone, they're wrong. You know, it's like, I need to talk to you about Jesus. You're wrong about Jesus. You need to get right about Jesus. You know, and we don't see it that way. We think of it as more in a loving way. But if you're, you know, if you're on the other side of that, that's what they hear, you know. And so it has created a lower barrier, a easier way for us to engage, you know, the lost in that regard. You know, it's changed our metric. You know, we went through a whole vision process 5 years ago now, and that process, one of our values, we were looking at this and we swallowed hard, but we accepted this idea that we really, the heartache that we have is that we're not multiplying. We don't have disciples or making disciples. We accepted that value as one of our core values, and so it drives our metrics now. You know, in a sense, is that we can celebrate about baptizing 6 people last week and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And we do. But at the same time, you know, our eye is on multiplication. Right? What are we doing with those people that are going to see them multiply into their workspace, neighborhood, families, or whatever? And it just changes the way you look at things. It changes the way you spend money. You know, it changes the way you allocate your staff resources toward things. All of a sudden, you know, it's like someone comes in and wipes the whiteboard clean, says, okay, you know, now start, now do this. You know, it's even from a practical level, this may not fit in this discussion, but I realized that, you know, I'm 70 years old. And so I realized this is the last chapter of my life. What do I want to leave behind at Shoal Creek? I created an incredible community that loves to ideate. You know, we love to think and dream and scheme and that kind of stuff. And it's just, I mean, it's we love it. But it was not a community of execution. Mm. And I realized, you know, I've hampered this organization by imprinting my personality on it. And so I began to look at my business friends and say, how do I create a culture of execution? And I ended up to say, hey, take a look at this. And they gave me this book called Get a Grip. And it was a book about implementing a playbook, a business playbook called EOS, you know, Entrepreneurial Operating System. And so 3.5 years ago, you know, we bit the bullet. We didn't like it necessarily because it was way too constricting. You know, it was way too tight, had all these rigid type things in it. But we accepted that discipline. And right now, I think every one of our staff would just say, hey, one of the best decisions we ever made is it has helped us, you know, get tight. And it's limited our waste of time around discussions has gone way down, and we've gotten more focused. We understand when we get an issue on the table that, you know, what's the idea here? I mean, how do we identify the true problem? You know, let's not talk about the solution. Let's identify the problem first. And it's disciplined us to do those kinds of things. So that's helped us. And then obviously on the other side, it's what created that clarity of multiplier. You know, it's like we do see that as a core value, and it drives our metrics, you know, in terms of how we see success. So I'm not very sure I answered your question there, Andrew, but
yeah, no, it's fascinating that there's still just a lot of the implementation of just even like some Western thought and Western, like just organizational leadership, like the EOS system and things like that. But then also that you're integrating a lot of just the global learnings and stuff. And so it still is very much feels like that hybrid model that you're trying to figure out and just make it better.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting about that is now a lot of our Eastern friends are beginning to gravitate toward that EOS model.
Oh, okay.
And so we're beginning to help them understand how to implement it and look at it. And they're excited about it. I mean, they feel like it's sort of a missing piece in some of their cultural, you know, training or cultural upbringing and stuff. And so they don't see it as a, you know, Western imprint that being forced down on them and stuff. So
interesting. Yeah. For those that are like unfamiliar, give us just like a high level view of like, what is that EOS system kind of look like?
Well, it creates rhythms around an organization to focus accountability. And so it starts with an accountability chart rather than an organizational chart. So you look at all the major in your organization, and you have a person that's accountable. And then it creates a timing chain. So there's a weekly meeting that you have that's the timing chain in all of this. And that weekly meeting has a standard set agenda. It's the same every week. And it's built to address all the things that you need. So the issues that you have to solve that come up and stuff like that. But every person that's in that meeting has a set of rocks. So it's built off of the Stephen Covey, you know, put the big rocks in first type thing. And so you have these 90 day, or we have 120 day. We have three semesters or trimesters that we operate on. So you have this 120 day, 3 to 5 major things that you report on every week that you come back and you say, hey, thumbs up, thumbs down. How's my rock? Is it on track? Off? If it's off track, then you spend a little bit of time with the team going to a to-do. Okay, in the next 7 days, what do we need to do to get it on track? And so once that's decided, you know, you move on, and everyone goes through their rocks every week.
So this is a really fascinating concept, because it's what the 3/3 group is, right? Where that where you're making commitments to be able to do something. Mm-hmm. So talk to me about this just from your perspective. From like you're making commitments and staying accountable in the workplace, doing this type of a system, but you're doing this in discipleship as well. And you're making commitments, yeah, holding one another accountable, like every single week, like all of these things are happening. Tell me just about from your perspective, what makes something like that so effective? Like whether it's neuroscience or like behavioral science or just something like that, from your vantage point, why is that so important?
I think a few reasons. The first that comes to mind is as a human being, I really enjoy progress. I like moving forward, and I don't necessarily like people sticking their nose in my business. I don't like being, held accountable in that sense, but I do like progress. And once I get over the fact that others can help me get to progress, when I have to report every week, on a rock, it's progress. When I have to report every week on what did you do with what you learned last week in this passage? And you can see how those things synced up in our culture really quickly. You know, it's like everyone saw the I will statement out of the discovery process and the EOS thing. It's like, oh my, this is just exactly the same. You know, it's like there was a real consistency, in our culture. So I think progress is really, a serious issue. I do think, that also, we tend to, especially in the Christian world, if you think about, the sort of the two main areas of leadership is support and challenge, we tend to really violate that because we're so heavy on support and so we don't understand challenge. And we often see challenges as a personality disorder sometimes, and we don't understand the beautiful mix of the two and when they go together. So it does provide that opportunity to provide a soft challenge. And so, I develop my rocks. My teammates don't. I mean, they have input into what they think my rocks ought to be. I develop them same way as I develop my I will statements. I'm looking at the passage and I say, okay, I think God wants me to do this week, do this week based on this passage. And so all I'm asking my community to do is help me do what I say I will do. Not just progress, but there's integrity. I mean, you and I feel healthier when there's integrity, when our words and our actions match. And so I think for our staff members, I think for our people in discovery groups, there's a sense of wholeness that comes when we say something and we do what we say. And I create an environment that holds me accountable for that, or just is just going to ask me the question, what'd you do? What'd you do with it? And that atmosphere, just provides the soil that I need to grow in, So I think that progress and integrity are two critical things that happen, in this accountable structure.
Yeah, that's awesome. And do you feel like the progress thing in particular, because I know that's probably part of your personality, maybe just that high red or something on like the insights discovery or high D and like disc or something like that. Do you feel like it's part of that too? But how do you feel like that interacts with other personalities and in a discipleship context as well as in the workplace?
Yeah, well, I do think there's no doubt that the pioneer mentality, that see success and accomplish tasks and that kind of stuff. But I think everybody, whether it's, the disc or, whatever it is, it's like everyone loves to be whole, in that sense, is that, again, your words and your actions match. So I think that's really important in that progress piece of it. Now, I do think that there are different challenges coming out of different quadrants, and that is, those who come from, the green, I'm trying to think of the colors there, but the guardian or the disc, the sea, that kind of stuff, is like there's a fear-based issue there. I don't want to be wrong, and coming from the S quadrant or, the blue, I think is it blue or green, the softer one?
Blue would be like thought oriented, detail oriented.
Oh, that's that. Okay, that's introverted. The C. Yeah, yeah. I think of that. The S and would be the green. It's like, you know, yeah. they want it to be softer and stuff. And so there's a need in these environments. Just if you've led discovery and you've held people accountable, or you facilitate EOS L10 meeting and stuff. There's an art to traveling through the roadmap that you're talking about. You know, and to realize that, you know, that high D type, you can just ask them outright, why didn't you do it? And they enjoy that, and they'll tell you why. But you could never ask that, you know, of any of the other three quadrants, because, you know, one will make excuses, one will be hurt, you know, and one will be, you know, terrified, you know, that they've been asked so directly. So there's an art, you know, to making sure you're speaking everyone's language in this process, you know, holding people accountable. But it what I discover, and this is one of the things about people who implement, you know, they say, hey, we're into DMM. And so what they do is they implement discovery, you know, in their group systems or something like that. And they think that out of groups are going to grow, you know, growth with lost people or something. But by and large, the Christian community is so devoid of the concept of obedience that when they get a taste of it in a soft way, like the discovery process, I look at a passage, I identify, what am I going to do this week? And I tell that out loud to people. People just light up to that. You know, it's like a new way of looking at the scriptures. And it's like, you think, I think Jesus said, do what I say, you know. I think that is, you know, you can't read the book of John without, you know, getting that, you know. So there's a flash onto that, that because there's such a drought, you know, in the Christian world in regards to obedience. What does it look like to pledge your allegiance to Jesus? So that's the beauty of that. And then I think on a church staff, I mean, sometimes so much time is wasted. Because there's so little traction that exists toward our vision. Yeah, you know, I mean, we put things on the walls. We're great at signage. We're great at, you know, messaging on Sunday morning and stuff. But when it comes to saying, okay, what progress did we make? You know, it's just like in the church unique process. You know, what are those metrics? You know, how do I keep score? You know, and I mean, the you know, in the religious world, we're terrible at that. You know, we don't want to keep score. Because, you know, if we did, man, if people knew what little we accomplished, you know, it's like, what are they given to? You know, it's like, oh my gosh.
Wow, man. Well, I could sit here and unpack that last 10-minute conversation for the rest of the day, man. That was worth its weight in gold right there. I appreciate you just taking some time for us today, Roy.
You're welcome, man.
For you stepping into this space. And you know, your book, Spent Matches, if anybody hasn't read this one yet, it's a little old at this point, right? You know, 10 years old, but it is a gold mine of just statistics and details and just the wrestling that Roy has gone through to really implement a disciple making strategy in the midst of a prevailing model style church. And so, which is something that a lot of our guys in our network are trying to accomplish right now. But Roy, thank you so much for everything.
Oh, you're welcome, man.
I ask you to maybe pray a blessing over our church planters before we go.
Oh, I'd love to. Father, we're just so grateful that you can gather us in these spaces, and the technology that exists is just incredible. We thank you for that. But I am mindful this morning, Father, when I look down at that participants and I see that there are nine people there, that the kingdom hours that we have gone through right here, we trust it's investment, that you will return this time spent as an investment, and it will reap eternal rewards. I just pray that you would encourage the men and women out there who are engaged in attempting to plant the gospel in such a way that it replicates itself. Father, it is a hard, hard, hard task. And so I ask that you would love on them in extra special ways, that they might seek their identity, not from their tasks, but from their relationship with their Father, that you are fond of them, whether they succeed or fail. that you are fond of them. You don't measure their worth on the basis of the numbers of people that attend on a Sunday morning or any other way. You measured their worth on a day long ago in history when you sacrificed the most precious relationship you had so that they could be your children. So thank you, Father, for them. And I just ask that they would have a day in which they revel in that identity, and they would just take great joy in understanding that your fondness of them never stops, no matter what they're in. You are fond of them. And just like the son in Luke 15, when they come down that road, you run to them. You run to them and throw your arms around them. So I just pray that they might feel that sense of preciousness that they have in your world. And we're thankful for them, Father. Thank you for what they do and for the dreams they have. We ask that you would give them the dreams, Father. They dream kingdom dreams. They dream bringing heaven to earth. They dream what you prayed and taught us to pray. So thank you, Father, for these men and women. And we just look forward to what you're going to do and hearing the stories from them. And we ask these things in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. Roy, so grateful for you, man. Thank you so much for your time.
Hey, thanks for the chance. Appreciate it, Andrew.